Our next guest is Scott Pruitt. On February 17th, the U.S. Senate confirmed Scott Pruitt as the 14th administrator of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Scott's overarching goal is to lead the EPA in a way that our future generations inherit a better and healthier environment. Most recently, he served as Attorney General for Oklahoma. He is recognized as a leader in the cause to restore the proper balance of power and responsibility between the states and the federal government. Before being elected Attorney General, he served 8 years in the Oklahoma State Senate, where he was a leading voice on fiscal responsibility. After earning his bachelor's degree from Georgetown College and graduating from the University of Tulsa College of Law, Scott went into private legal practice, specializing in constitutional law. In addition to his life as a civil servant, Scott is a successful entrepreneur. He is co-owner and managing general partner of Oklahoma City's AAA minor league baseball team, the Oklahoma City Redhawks. Scott and his wife, Marilyn, are the parents of 2 children. Scott, would you join us? After Scott's remarks, Tony Perkins will be joining the stage for a few questions with Scott.
Thanks, Bill. Thank you so much. Thank you, Bill, for the very kind introduction. And I'm so thankful that folks, when they introduce me at times, they mention the baseball background. You know, I played baseball at the University of Kentucky, and sometimes the mistake is made that I played basketball there, and then I stand up, and people say, you didn't play basketball there. But that baseball is in my blood, and the Oklahoma City Redhawks, that AAA team, is something that we were a Rangers affiliate and had a good time. And that makes Yogi Berra one of my favorite philosophers. And I don't know if you know much about Yogi, but he had an old saying, the future ain't what it used to be, is what he said one time. And I want to say to you, with respect to the EPA, the future ain't what it used to be. And I kind of want to, what I'd like to do is perhaps share a little bit with you about the first 100 days. I'm approaching my 100-day mark actually next month. And then what we're going to focus on the next 100 days. But the first 100 days, my very first day on the job, I went in to speak to the agency, about 250 folks in attendance, and then I was live streamed out across the country. And I shared with them that the agency was going to refocus its efforts in 3 core areas in how we do business. First and foremost, we were going to restore a commitment to rule of law. And I know that sounds fundamental, and it sounds core, and it sounds basic, but the EPA the last several years has not been about something as fundamental and core and basic as respecting rule of law. And what I mean by that is, you know, the only power that we have at the EPA and the only power that agencies have in the executive branch is the power given to them by Congress. And when you take the actions of the EPA over the last several years, just a couple of examples, the Waters of the United States rule was an effort made by the EPA to reimagine authority, to assert jurisdiction over dry creek beds and puddles across this country. It was literally a power grab to say, when you do permitting, when you build subdivisions, when you engage in oil and gas development or farming and ranching, the first place that you're gonna stop is Washington, D.C. for permission. Now that's exactly the opposite of what the Clean Water Act is supposed to be about. It's the exact opposite of federalism principles, but the agency nonetheless reimagined its authority and said, we're going to assert jurisdiction in that way, and did not respect rule of law. The Clean Power Plan. The Clean Power Plan was an effort by the past administration to reimagine authority to regulate stationary sources under the Clean Air Act. And by the way, they tried twice and struck out twice with respect to their regulation of stationary sources. So this commitment to rule of law is not something that we should take for granted. We need to restore a commitment across the federal government to say that the executive branch exists to enforce the law, administer the law, and not legislate or make up the law. And that's what we need to focus upon, and that's what I said day one. Day two, second thing I said to them was that rule of law was going to be important, and we're going to restore a commitment to rule of law, but process is going to matter as well. And when I say process, when we engage in rulemaking at the EPA, we shouldn't engage in rulemaking through litigation. We shouldn't encourage lawsuits to be filed by third parties like Sierra Club or NRDC or other groups and say, sue us and we will regulate through litigation. That is an abuse of the process that Congress has put into place. In fact, Congress has said, as we do rulemaking, we're supposed to follow something called the Administrative Procedures Act. We're supposed to propose a rule, take comment, hear from folks across the country on how it's going to impact them, industry and states and citizens, and then respond to those comments and make informed decisions on how we do rulemaking. That is in short supply at the agency, at least historically. The future ain't what it used to be, as I indicated. So we're restoring a commitment to process, that we're going to engage in robust rulemaking to hear from folks across the country, to make sure that we're informed and we get the rules right in the first instance and not have to resort to a sue and settle consent decree kind of approach to rulemaking. And the third thing I said to them, and this is something near and dear to my heart, and I see General Meese in attendance well, and General Meese is a dear friend, and he has been such a leader and such a great benefit to me during my time as Attorney General, but a commitment to federalism. To make sure that states are active and equal partners with the EPA in regulating water and regulating air. You know, Congress did something at the inception of the Clean Water Act, the inception of the Clean Air Act. It was very prescriptive. Congress was very prescriptive in saying there's a very, very important role for the states. Wrote it into statute. During the past administration, that was displaced. During the past administration, that was disregarded. To give you an example, under the past administration, let me give you a baseline first. President Bush 1, President Clinton, and President Bush 2, during those three presidential administrations, they issued a total of 5 federal implementation plans under the Clean Air Act. And a federal implementation plan is a FIP that basically says to the states, we're going to coerce and tell you how you're going to do your work at the state level. They issued 5 over 3 presidential administrations. President Obama issued 56. And that's demonstrative of an attitude out of Washington, D.C., and out of the previous administration, that they were going to dictate to the states and not engage in federalism. So what we have done is, restore a commitment. I've actually deployed individuals to meet with governors across the country. I met with 20 governors approximately during my first week on the job. And I've maintained commitment with them out of Governor Greitens in Missouri, Governor Holcomb in Indiana, Governor Bevin in Kentucky, Governor Sandoval in Nevada. We have been working through issues to address air attainment and Superfund and all these various environmental statutes. And they are saying across the country, Democrat and Republican alike, we're very thankful that someone's listening to us again, that they're drawing upon the resources and expertise of the states and governors to do the good work of protecting our environment and respecting roles of federalism that Congress has put in the statute. So those three principles have really been at the core of actions we've taken for the first 100 days: a commitment to rule of law, a commitment to process, and a commitment to federalism. And as we've done that, we have rolled back quite a bit of regulation. We've had over 22 significant regulatory responses since I've been serving during the first 90 or so days. Those 22 plus regulatory responses with the overreach from WOTUS to Clean Power Plan to various rules that were passed by the previous administration, impacting almost 1.4 million jobs. There's genuine excitement across the country with respect to what we're doing to get back in the lane that the EPA is supposed to be in. You know, there's a very important role for the EPA to play, and that's what's lost, I think, in this discussion at times. There are air quality issues that cross state line. There are water quality issues that cross state line. You know, think about Flint and Gold King, Colorado, failures of the past administration to really focus on the core mission. And that's really what I want you to hear next, is that we're going to have a renewed focus over the next 100 days on positive environmental benefits that we can achieve for the American people. I'm going to give you some statistics and some information that I don't think you hear a lot about. In fact, when you look at the last administration, people think that they did such a wonderful job with respect to the environment, but their record was pretty poor, actually. With air attainment under the Clean Air Act, when President Obama came into office, there were roughly 24 states that were in attainment with air quality standards across the country. When he left office, there were 31. We have 1,322 approximate Superfund sites across the country. That's more than when President Obama came into office. Water quality, you had Gold King in Colorado and you had Flint in Flint, Michigan. They tried to regulate CO2 twice and failed twice, as I indicated earlier. The record of the past administration is not a very good record as far as providing good outcomes to the American citizen across the country. So we're going to focus on objectives and metrics. We're actually going to go into the Superfund sites across the country and do the job of cleaning up the environment. The past administration talked a lot. We're going to do a lot. I mean, I want to get this one example. You know, one example, just to let you know about how there wasn't a commitment to the core functions of the agency and the mission. There's a site in St. Louis, Missouri, the Westlake Superfund site. And for those in the room that don't know what Superfund sites are, these are locations across the country that have waste, that some lead in the soil or uranium. And in St. Louis, Missouri, there's a solid waste facility. that in 1970, there was about 8,700 tons of uranium from the Manhattan Project that was mixed with about 38,000 tons of solid waste across a large geographical area. So in 1970, that happened. 1990, the EPA designated that site as a National Priority List site. 27 years later, 2017, the EPA still has not made a decision on whether the uranium should be removed or capped. Not cleaned up, just a decision on what should be done at the site. Now think about that, 27 years just to make a decision. That is wholly unacceptable. Think about the citizens in St. Louis, Missouri, that have a facility that they're living near that has uranium mixed with solid waste, and the EPA has not done its most fundamental and core job of cleaning up that site and remediating it so the people in that area can enjoy that area once again. That's just unacceptable. And so we're actually going to do something about that in Westlake. We're going to focus on the site in East Chicago and the Port of Portland in Oregon and these sites across the country to make sure that we're doing our core mission and doing it very well. We're going to make sure, with respect to air attainment, and you may be aware of this, but with respect to air quality standards, the past administration would take monitoring equipment and place it under overpasses or near a power generation facility, and they would take the data from that monitor, and then they would model it across the entire state, creating non-attainment or areas that they would say we're not meeting the air quality standards. We're going to the governors across the country and saying, how about we get real data? How about we get real information and find out where those hot spots are and focus our resources to clean those areas up as opposed to just creating more and more, you know, non-compliance and non-attainment, unless, of course, your objective is to impact permitting in an adverse way. So we're going to focus on improving air quality in this country, a core mission of the agency. And with respect to water quality, you know, when you see what happened in Gold King, Colorado, when you see what happened in Flint, Michigan, the EPA failed. The EPA failed to do its job, and there was no accountability whatsoever from the media or from from people across the country with the past administration. Gold King, Colorado, the EPA went into that area and spilled toxic waste into the Animas River, impacting New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah, and then walked away and did not do anything to respond to the harm that they caused. That's wrong, and we're going to make it right in Denver, Colorado, with respect to that issue. But these are areas that we can focus upon and make a real difference for citizens across the country. You know, when I was nominated for this position in December of last year, many thought, and by the way, I don't recommend it. The confirmation process is not good for your health, so it's not something that I recommend for everybody in the room. But as I went through that process, many thought that we would just simply put a vacancy sign on the front door at the EPA. And that really is not and has never been the focus. The focus is making sure that it gets back within its lane, that it does its job and does its core mission and respects the role of the states as we do that. So it's an exciting time to be there. I really appreciate the president's leadership. The president has put people in positions of leadership across his cabinet. I say this often, what a wonderful group we have. They encourage me every day, and I mean that sincerely. We get along famously well. We deliberate and collaborate together. Sonny Perdue at the Ag Department and Rick Perry at DOE and Ryan Zinke at DOI, we are truly working together as partners. And the president deserves a lot of credit at putting people in positions of leadership at each of these agencies that are about getting things done. And I think we ought to respect that and celebrate that. And when you think about what he and this administration has accomplished in the first 100 plus days, it's quite remarkable. I do believe there's optimism across the country. I believe that people for the first time believe that Washington, D.C. is not going to be as consequential in their lives as it has been the last several years. That there's somebody at the helm of leadership, both at the cabinet level, but in the White House, that understands the role of the states, role of the federal government, and that those two need to work together to serve the American people. And so it's a very exciting time to be serving, and I really appreciate the president's offer and the ability to serve him and serve this country. And I will tell you this, I'm hopeful that as we restructure the agency, as we refocus its mission, the people across the country will look at this agency once again as the agency it should have been, an agency that serves the American people and doesn't dictate them. I often joke that on the street where the EPA is located, there are two government buildings. One is the IRS and the other is the EPA. I seek to be the most popular government building on the block. And I think I think that we've got a good head start in that regard. So I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you. I appreciate your encouragement. We're about consequential things, and we're looking forward to better outcomes in the future. So God bless you, and I look forward to your questions. Thanks so much.
Scott, thanks for agreeing to take a few questions and just have a conversation about the EPA, your vision. And I know when I saw your name associated with the potential candidates for EPA, I know that's been a passion of yours on regulatory issues. I mean, you've been up here, you were fighting the Obama administration. Regulatory reform has been a top issue from this president from day one, and I can't think of a department that's probably provides a better poster child for that issue. Why is the regulatory certainty that you're pursuing so important for America's economy, and what's ahead for us?
You know, when you think about the last several years, the congressman was just talking about the growth or lack thereof over the last 8 or so years, and there's lots of reasons for that, you know, fiscal policy, tax policy. But I think the greatest impediment to economic growth the last several years has been regulatory uncertainty, and it's not just in the energy and environmental space. It's in the finance sector. It's in the healthcare sector. It's across the board. Because what happens with the regulatory agencies over the last several years is they truly change the rules of engagement to the point that that businesses don't know what's expected of them. You know, I've described this and heard it described as regulatory pancaking as it relates to what we do at the EPA, where we will issue a rule and then 2 years later issue a subsequent rule that undoes what occurred 2 years prior. And so you have businesses that have invested significant dollars to comply with the regulations, and then it's changed in a short time thereafter. So it creates paralysis. And then, as I indicated, Tony, in my comments, regulatory uncertainty really is I think, encouraged when you have a lack of respect for rule of law, when you don't have a commitment to process, and these things that I talked about, because folks don't know, do I comply with the statute or do I comply with the rule? Like the Waters of the United States rule, what do you do? I mean, do you seek out a permit? If you have a dry creek bed on your property and you want to do some oil and gas development, the EPA of late would say, yes, you need to seek a permit from us. And if you don't, then 2 or 3 years from now, we may fine you $80,000 a day, and it's a significant impediment to economic growth and investment. So what we're doing is key to creating certainty. We need a longer window as far as regulations. We need to be able to say to those that are regulated, here's what's expected of you. It's tied to the statute, so you don't have to worry about us overreaching. And oh, by the way, you had this period of time to comply so that folks can invest and allocate resources and personnel to achieve those ends. That's the way it should be. Partnership with the states, compliance and assistance, giving certainty to those in industry and citizens across the country, and a time frame in which to conform and meet those regulations, that creates the kind of environment that I think enhances economic development.
So are you sensing, as you said, you've already met with 24 governors across the country and business leaders, are you sensing a sigh of relief that there is now someone who's not going to be throwing obstacles in their way, but rather setting in place this structure that allows them to succeed?
Yeah, I mean, governors across the country, and this is not, Democrat and Republican are so thankful and meaningfully, sincerely say this, they're so thankful someone's listening. You know, that that we're actually reaching out to them and talking about Superfund sites and talking to them about attainment issues and working with them on water quality and water infrastructure. I mean, the president's made a commitment to invest in infrastructure, and that's not just roads and bridges, that's water infrastructure. And if you look at certain parts of our country, we have aged infrastructure to the point that needs to be a consideration. And so that's something that governors, I think, across the country are very excited that for the first time in a lot of years.
Well, let's jump across the pond. Let's talk about Paris.
Yeah, that's an uncontroversial topic.
I know, and we're not controversial people.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
You've been very clear about that.
Yes.
You think that's not something we need to be a part of.
Yeah, Paris represents all that's wrong with the past administration on these issues, because Paris is an example of this country going and internationally and just lying prostrate, you know, basically being apologetic about what we're doing to reduce air pollution. Do you know that we're at pre-1994 levels today with respect to our CO2 footprint? And here's what's going to be shocking to you, and not because of government mandate, but because of innovation and technology. Because of the private sector investing in innovation and technology to ensure a better outcome on CO2 and capturing CO2. And that you won't hear this from the environmental left, but it's largely because of hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling that we've seen a reduction in CO2. We burn coal cleaner. We burn coal cleaner in this country than we used to. So why do you go to Paris and say to the world, we're leading the world already in reducing our CO2 footprint. Why do you go there and say, oh, punish us? You know, we're going to reach 26 to 28% reductions in greenhouse gases while China and India do nothing. And that's not an editorial comment. That's not an exaggeration. China and India, under the Paris Accord, had no obligations to take until the year 2030. And many believe that the emission targets they had after 2030 would naturally occur through a slowing economy. If you go back and look at the criticism levied against Paris at the time that it was cut, the left criticized it as much as the right. The right said it's a treaty, which it is, by the way, and should have been ratified. But secondly, the left said China and India weren't held accountable. So it was what the past administration did with all the environmental issues. They talked a lot. They went to Paris and talked and made the world think, you know, that bumper stickers are the way that you get things done. And so Paris is absolutely a bad deal for this country. It puts us last as opposed to first. It puts us in an economic disadvantage, in my view. And the rest of the world was applauding as we did that. So I really believe we need to exit and exit cleanly and send a message to the world that we have nothing to be apologetic about. We have done it the right way. In fact, I'll share this with you, Tony. I've actually said, let's go from Paris to Pittsburgh. Let's bring people here to this country. Let's bring all the representatives from those countries and show them how we do business here, how we strike the balance between pro-growth and pro-environment. It was the past administration that told each of us in this room, everyone in this room, the past administration said, you have to choose. You have to choose between jobs and protecting the environment. Now, when have we ever done that as a country? When have we as a country said, oh, we have to choose between the two? No, what we've done as a country since 1980, do you know that we've obviously grown the economy pretty substantially since 1980? Do you know we've reduced air pollutants under the Clean Air Act by 65% since 1980 at the same time that we've grown an economy? We know how to do it in this country. And so let's bring folks here and say, this is how you do it. This is the technology you deploy. Now take it back to China, take it back to India, take it back to Russia, take it back across the globe and do it the way we do here. If you really care about CO2 reduction, we're going to keep growing an economy and respecting our environment. So I do have a few thoughts about it, Tony.
Well, and I would think, I'm glad you're getting over your shyness on that issue.
But yeah. I've had a lot of coffee today, so that, you know, a little feisty, I guess.
This is an issue. I mean, as you describe it, this is a America First issue.
It is.
And I would think this is something that resonates throughout this administration.
Look, and President Trump, you know, has great instincts. America First in trade, America First in protecting our border, America First in national security and foreign policy. And you're exactly right. When it comes to the environment, it should be the same. You know, we should have an America First approach, and we truly do it better than anybody in the world. And we need to celebrate that, recognize that, be unapologetic about it, and make sure that the rest of the world doesn't use events like Paris to put us at an economic disadvantage. Do you know, I mean, this, so just to tell you how they play games with this, under the Paris Accord, Russia, you know, each of the countries had to submit commitments. You know, they signed the agreement, and then you submitted a commitment afterwards. Russia, when they submitted their commitment, they used 1990 as their baseline. We used 2006. So when they used 1990 as their baseline, as far as their reductions, it actually permitted them to increase their CO2 emissions by burning more coal. And it was so false as far as what kind of commitment there was. India and China, again, made no commitments until 2030. So it was an example, again, of this country going to, the past administration going to places like Paris and saying, please penalize our economy. We're going to put two arms behind our back and let the rest of the world do what they do. And while we're already doing better than them as far as reduction. So it's something we need to exit.
Now, you made reference to this earlier about the accomplishments of the Obama administration, but you said it in a little bit of a different way last week. I saw this in the headlines. Obama is no environmental savior. Caught a few headlines and got a little bit of attention. He did mislead Americans on what he was doing. What was behind that? Was that kind of a look behind the curtain as to what he was really doing?
You know, there's a saying, we got some folks in the room from Oklahoma. I saw Paul Blair back there. We got some folks from Texas, I'm sure. There's a saying in that part of the country, all hat, no cattle. And the President Obama's all hat, no cattle when it came to environmental issues. Because Truly, when you look at the core mission of the agency, air attainment under the National Ambient Air Quality Program, NAAQS, as it's called, 6 criteria pollutants that we regulate, 31 states in non-attainment now versus 24 than when he came into office, 1,322 Superfund sites, more than when he came into office. The water issue as far as Flint and Gold King, obviously live and in color as far as the failure there. And again, their focus on CO2, they tried to regulate twice and failed twice. The U.S. Supreme Court struck them down in the UR decision where they tried to engage in the tailoring rule, and then the CPP, Clean Power Plan, was struck, not struck down, but stayed by the U.S. Supreme Court. So what's so great about that record? I don't know. I mean, that's what we're asking rhetorically. And then they come in and they want to criticize us with respect to what we may be doing on the environment. We're actually going to get stuff done. We're not going to talk about it. We're actually going to do stuff. It's kind of interesting, Tony, because you know there's a recent study by the University of Arizona that said we talk about 16,000 words a day. Now I probably beat that, but 16,000 words a day is what the average person speaks. At the EPA, I think it's like 20,000 because they meet all the time. And so I was joking a week or so ago, and I said, look, I'm going to put a cap on the number of words a day. And when we reach the cap, we're actually going to start doing something. You know, so we're just going to quit meeting. We're actually going to do something. And it's being received, I think, pretty well.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know, I was saying, all hat, no cat. I was in Louisiana, we have a different phrase. It's alligator mouth and hummingbird rear end, but a different phrase.
I hadn't heard that one.
You can use it.
Okay, all right.
You made references a couple times to Superfunds, and this is something that's been neglected over the last 8 years. What are your plans, and why is it so important?
I mean, this is an area, and I tried to unpack it a little bit in my comments, but the CERCLA or Superfund statute, it's a statute that EPA has primary responsibility to administer. The states really don't have any role. It's really given to the EPA, go out and clean up, remediate these thousands of sites across the country that have waste, lead and uranium in the soil, truly endangering people's health in a very important and meaningful way. And these sites just languish. They just languish. I mean, I told you about the national priority list. You know, these sites get listed on the national priority list. Many of these sites have been on the list for 30 to 40 years. Now think about that. Does that sound like a priority to you? I mean, I wish that I could say that Westlake in St. Louis is kind of an isolated, one-off kind of deal. It's not. It's across the spectrum. I went to a site in East Chicago on the Indiana side of the border, lead in the soil, and the EPA has been litigating, debating, discussing, analyzing, whatever word you want to use, for a decade or so, whether we should go down 48 inches or 24 inches to remove the lead. Well, I don't know if it should be 48 or 24. I'm going to figure it out real quickly, but we shouldn't spend 10 years over 24 inches, right? So somebody needs to lead. Somebody needs to make a decision. Somebody needs to get the data and actually move. And that's what's been so shocking to me. Is I've spent time at the agency, is there's just no urgency to do that which is most fundamental. How do we lead in Chicago and lead in St. Louis and lead in Portland and lead in these places across the country to serve America, to provide very tangible, beneficial environmental outcomes for them, as opposed to engaging in talks in Paris, right, in this amorphous kind of thing of, yeah, we need to do more when we've already done a lot. So it seems to me that's why this discussion about what was so great about the past administration and what we're going to do differently is so important, because we're going to win. We're going to do well, and we're actually going to have outcomes, I think, that people are going to hopefully at the end of 4 years say that's what to do it.
Well, let me ask you about that, and we're about to wrap up here, but those core issues, obviously making sure we have clean water and clean air and all of those things are core values and issues that you focus on. But when you talk about the lack of movement on some of these, what should be at the core of the mission of the agency, is it because that's just the nature of government, that it's ineffective, or were all of these issues kind of pushed to the back so that the president could use the administration to pursue his objectives and goals?
I mean, I think every administration has priorities, and I'm thankful that this president has a priority of getting back to the basics, doing that which we're supposed to do and doing it well, and making sure we respect the role of the states and what they're supposed to do. And I do think there was a measure of lack of focus. But I think in many respects, Tony, it's just leadership, attitude, management, you know, and actually measuring outcomes. I mean, I truly, and I don't say this in jest, I'm trying to end every meeting at the EPA saying, what is our action item? What are we seeking to achieve? And what's the timeline to get it done? I mean, that's fundamental how you do business and how you live day to day. But that is so foreign to how government agencies work. And so I'm trying to end every meeting by saying, okay, what's the game plan here? Who's doing it? And when are we going to get it done? And there was a meeting a couple weeks ago in my office. I'm going to give you two examples about this very issue. But one is, I'm going to tell you the group, but there's a group of career folks that want to sit down with some political folks and just talk about how we were coordinating or whatever. And the career folks asked the political folks, they said, why do we have to do everything in 2 weeks? You know, and so they just have this concept, we'll just get it done when it gets done. But to give you a real live example about that, there was something before we came into office, something called an information collection request form on methane that was sent to 15,000 oil and gas producers across the country, an ICR on methane. And it cost $42 million for compliance. And there was no really basis to it. It was not in support of rulemaking. It wasn't in advance of rulemaking. It was just a letter that was sent out by the agency to 15,000 businesses saying, just go get this information. We're not going to tell you what we're going to do with it. Just send it to us and go spend the cost to do it. And so we were sitting, this is like 2 weeks in. I was sitting down at the table with our leadership team, many of whom were not a part of our team. We were still transitioning and we're still dealing with that a little bit. But I said, we're going to withdraw that letter. And the person sitting to my right said, Scott, that's going to take 30 days to withdraw that letter. And I said, really, 30 days? And he said, yeah, 30 days. And I said, here's the deal. I can write the letter in less than 2 hours. So I'll write the letter. And if you can't get it mailed in 24 hours, I'll get a mail house. And they'll mail it in 24 hours. And he came back the next day and said, we got the letter out. So that's an example of the inertia and the lack of urgency. And that's what you have to do in pushing and being dogged as you approach these changes.
We got just a couple of more minutes. I do want to ask you one question because we want you to be successful. We want this administration to be successful because we think it's critical to really to our economy, but also to the conservative movement here to see a conservative administration succeed. What does success look like for you? At the end of this term, what does it look like?
Two things. One, a restoration across the country of an understanding that we can be pro-growth and pro-environment, that we don't have to put jerseys on, that Republicans and Democrats, states and the federal government, citizens and industry and regulators understand that we can grow our economy, grow jobs, and also be good stewards of the environment. I mean, that is something that we have to achieve. This mentality that we've seen in the last several years, that we just hoard, that we keep 2/3 of our fossil fuels in the ground, I mean, that is never where we've been as a country. We've always been about what? We're going to grow our economy. Wealthy countries take care of the environment. Go look at any studies historical or otherwise, wealthy countries take care of their environment. We want to create more wealth, more jobs, more opportunity, harvest the resources God has blessed us with, and do so with what? A sensitivity to being good stewards of the environment. That's what we're called to do. So restoring that, big picture. And then secondly, making sure that the agency, long-term, restructured, understands it has a very important role, but it's supposed to stay in its lane. So we're looking at restructuring across. There's more things that we'll probably do next year as far as, you know, the regions versus the federal, the Washington, D.C., how they work together. But we're going to get back in the business of making sure that rule of law, process, federalism is ingrained in how this agency does its business practically, and then that commitment overall to pro-growth and pro-environment. If we achieve that at the end of four years and 8 years at the present, you know, I hope it's an eight-year run, that's going to do great things for this country for the long term. And something I think is very important to our future.
Ladies and gentlemen, please thank you, Scott Pruitt.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.